As AI continues to revolutionize our world, there's a critical conversation we can't ignore: AI safety and security. And that's where HackerOne's AI red teaming comes into play, rigorously testing AI models to prevent them from being misled or exploited. HackerOne employs over 2 million ethical hackers, and 750 of them specialize in prompt hacking and other AI security and testing. So HackerOne isn't just theorizing, they're actively safeguarding AI's future. Just recently, a team unearthed over 100 vulnerabilities in just 2 weeks. So whether you're at the helm of a startup or steering product innovation at a large company, it's time to prioritize AI security. Visit HackerOne.com/AI for more. Again, HackerOne.com/AI.
This episode is sponsored by porkbun.com. Porkbun is a refreshingly different domain name registrar that's different from the other ones like GoDaddy or Namecheap. They've got low prices on hundreds of different domain extensions. They've got everything from .com domains to really cool ones like .pro, .dev, .xyz. Every domain name at Porkbun comes with tons of freebies too, like SSL certificate, whois privacy, DNS, URL forwarding, and hosting trials. Because why pay for things that should be free, right? All these incredible features and tools are backed by incredible support, 365 days a year, and more 5-star reviews on Trustpilot from real customers than anyone else. Look, you can get $1 off your next domain name from Porkbun and see why they're the best domain name registrar around by using our code. Just go to porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. That's porkbun, porkbun.com/rocketshipfm24. You'll save $1 on your next domain. This episode is brought to you by Gigantic. At Gigantic, you can level up your product skills through live, small group, cohort-based trainings. We're incredibly excited to welcome you to our next cohort of our product strategy training, kicking off in January of 2024. This course will take you through the frameworks that product leaders use at companies like eBay, DoorDash, Groupon, Rent the Runway, in order to scale their teams. It's taught by Ben Foster, a friend of this podcast, who is the former chief product officer at Whoop. So come join us. Go to gigantic.is. That's gigantic.is. And save your seat for our January cohort. Your potential is gigantic, and we're here to help you reach it. Go to gigantic.is to reserve your seat today. Today, we have three stories of how companies are using data to inform their growth: HubSpot, CodeShip, and Shopify. They all shared with us what they're doing to use data to inform their growth. Incredible learnings here. So we're going to go one by one through each story, through each company, and learn how they're using data internally. Welcome to Rocketship.fm. Podcast where we explore startups from funding to growth, from culture to sales, and everything in between. I'm Michael Sacco.
And I'm Joelle Goldman.
So we have three fantastic stories for you here. The first one coming from HubSpot, where Brian Balfour breaks down his methodology for building a data-informed growth engine. So the first thing we need to cover is why. Why do we need these systems for building and measuring these experiments? Here's Brian Balfour.
The biggest mistake I see people make is they try to focus on this hack and this tactic, and it doesn't work. A lot of the reasons, which I kind of describe on my blog, is just because, you know, the marketing world is changing. What works 30 days ago doesn't necessarily work today. And, you know, or a lot of people kind of look at what works for others and they try to copy what works for others, but what works, you know, for one business isn't going to work for another, because from business to business, the audiences are different, the products are different, and the customer life cycle is different, right? Like, the businesses are different, plain and simple. And so this process is really designed around like how you uncover like the unique things, the combination of variables that are going to really work for your business and really help drive the growth of your business, rather than trying to look for that magical secret or, copying thinking like somebody else.
And so the first step in the process is to find a focus. That means find something that you want to change. And this is something that you're going to focus on for the next 30 to 90 days.
Consider it a growth sprint. It's basically 30 to 90 days. And really, that's us focusing on a certain area. We kind of pick, you know, we have like two or three people and like a small team kind of choose a really high impact area that they can focus on. And we set some goals. We set a destination of where we want to go. We don't know exactly how we're going to get there. And in a big part of the process of getting there is, you know, we brainstorm a bunch of lists of experiments, which I'll talk about in a second. But we really sort of stay heads down and stay focused on that one thing for like 30 to 90 days, because to make significant progress on it is really comes from basically running a lot of experiments, learning from those experiments, and then taking those learnings to come up with even better experiments, or prioritize experiments that were previously far down our priority list. And so as you run these experiments and learn more, you know, your path from here to your destination, you know, it might start off extremely zigzaggy at first, but you kind of start to narrow in and find the most, you know, the most efficient path to that destination. And it's really hard to do that if you're not focused on a specific area for a reasonable enough period of time. You just don't get in that rhythm of that, like, you know, of learning those things around that focus area quickly enough and iterating enough. So,
and then we get into the actual process of setting up these experiments. Step one is to ask questions. And so once you have your objective, say it's to improve your onboarding flow, then you ask questions that lead you to conclusions, or testable conclusions, hypotheses, if you will. And this helps you frame your experiment. This helps you lay out the objectives of your experiment after you take a couple days to kind of dive into some of the issues.
Another, making sure we don't get kind of stuck in this sort of cold start mode. And there, you know, as part of the process, we really developed different exercises, brainstorming exercises, to really get us in sort of the mindset immediately when we start a new focus area and get a bunch of ideas going. And so one of the first things that we do when we pick out a new focus area is we do something called question storming. We get in a room and we ask nothing but questions about that focus area for 15 or 20 minutes. And so, like, if we're trying to focus on increasing virality, we'll just ask things like, you know, who's inviting the most people? Are they inviting coworkers or friends? How are they deciding who to invite? Do people invite in the first 30 days, or does it take them longer? Like, and we just start generating all of these questions. And what that does is it immediately starts to highlight, you know, one, like, the things that we just don't know yet. And two, right, it starts leading us to some potential answers. You know, and any great answer starts with a good question. And so these types of exercises that we can just, like, always go back to, we always know that we have in our back pocket and we've done before, helps us really get off to, like, a really fast start whenever we kind of choose a new focus area.
So then step two is prioritizing. And prioritizing helps to lay out what the experiment will be and how you're going to run it. And so the three main things to keep in mind here are: you're going to need to figure out the resources required, the impact it could potentially have, and the probability of the experiment being a success.
Exercises, you know, we'll have a long list of experiment ideas, but the next big step is just prioritizing. And we try to prioritize by looking at three things per experiment. We think about things. We try to balance. It's a balance between, you know, the amount of resources, required, basically the impact that we think the experiment is going to have, and the probability that the experiment is successful. So kind of a low, medium, and a high.
And then how do they know if the experiment is successful?
And so we go through the impact is the most important one. We'll generate a hypothesis and we'll actually come up with a sentence that it's like, if this experiment is successful, this variable that we're trying to influence will increase by this much because, and then we list out the assumptions that we're making that kind of produce that. And that, you know, does a few things, right? It helps us start to measure apple to apples on experiments around, you know, potential impact. But it also exposes the assumptions that we're making, which I find a lot of teams don't do. They let their team members say, well, I think this is the best idea, so I'm going to go do it. Or the VP of marketing or growth will be like, I think this is the best idea. And so you really got the highest paid person problem. Actually thinking through the assumptions and listening out the assumptions starts to expose a lot of the thinking behind the hypothesis and behind the reasoning. And you really start to get better and better over time at picking the ones that will have like the highest impact or the highest ROI for your investment. So that's really the second step of the process is we really go through and try to prioritize things. And we try to do this brainstorm in the initial prioritization in the first couple days of a process. And then we'll like jump into the rest of it, which is really about implementing and analyzing and kind of repeating it over and over and over.
So now that you've asked questions, you've figured out what you're going to be experimenting with, you've prioritized your experiment, and you know what success looks like, it's time to launch and measure your experiment.
The process is iterative, doesn't mean it's incremental. So a learning we could take from an experiment could lead to another small change somewhere else, but could also lead to a very big change. So I think people get that very confused in terms of iterative and incremental. And so like an example of like a small versus big might be like, let's say like we're working on some, you know, a couple people are working on virality. We test 5 different themes of messaging, you know, something around social validation, something around trying to like the copy celebrates with the user as they send the invite, right? We test these different themes and we find one like just blows, you know, the other ones out of the water, right? Does really well. We might then say, okay, where else can we use that type of messaging to help improve conversions? Oh, like our onboarding process, our activation process. All right, you know, let's create another experiment. And for the team, if there's a couple people focusing on activation, we'll throw that into their experiment pipeline. And that might be another small change that they might try out in the activation flow. So that would be like an example of like something small.
So what would be an example of something a little bit bigger? What's a 90-day trial look like?
Something bigger would be like, which actually recently just happened to us, is, you know, we're focusing on first 7-day retention. And we did a bunch of qualitative conversations and surveys, and we were looking at our onboarding process. And a lot of people who churn described to us, you know, I just didn't really understand the product, you know, when I, my first use. And so we thought it was like this one particular, the last piece of our onboarding flow where we kind of demonstrate the product to them. And that wasn't clear enough, you know? And so we did a bunch of work. We did some work there. We started cleaning up the CTAs. We started doing a bunch of other things to try to make the value prop clear. And we just weren't getting any movement in the numbers. And so we really dug into the data and we were like, well, how many people are, you know, getting to this page and all, and kind of this other stuff. And one of the things through their process that we learned was, wow, there was this entire large group of people that were like activating, but were never getting to that page. They were getting stuck sort of the step before. And it totally changed our thinking and how we thought about first 7-day retention. And we started working on kind of the step before in the onboarding process. And that was a pretty big change in direction from what we were working on, but that started to actually move the numbers for us.
So there you have it. Ask questions, prioritize, launch, and measure. And if you know what your success looks like, if you know your endpoint where you're trying to go and you give yourself enough time to get there, 30 days for small experiments, 90 days for large experiments, you can then use the data to your advantage and have enough data to make an intelligent and informed decision. And with this, you'll start to see the impact of each experiment that you run build on top of each other. And we're going to hear the next two stories, which are so worth the wait. But first, a quick word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show.
What if I told you there was a framework you could follow that would all but ensure growth for your entire organization? Okay, well, it might not be that easy. There's always things that get in the way, but there is a ton to be learned from what CodeShip is doing. Here's Manuel Weiss, their co-founder and CMO.
Basically, at CodeShip, we are, I'd say, very numbers informed. So basically, with everything we do, also on the marketing side, of course, but also with features we build, basically anything, we have this rule that everything you think is only an assumption, and your assumptions have to be verified by experiments. So basically, you have a new idea and you want to try something, you have to think about a way how this can be quantified and that it's measurable. And after you found a way, you just make your experiments and run it and gather the information out of it and see if your assumption was correct. And if the experiment failed completely, you just stop. And if the results were like okay-ish, I guess, you just iterate the experiment and try to optimize it. And you do this like over several months and gather insights all the time.
So basically what this is all about is delivering evidence, right? It's about creating a process that ensures that you don't just work on things because you think they'll work or because someone told you it worked for them or it even worked for you a year ago. It's ensuring that what you work on now is actually moving the needle because you have the data and the evidence to back up your assumption. Now, before we jump into their overarching framework, it's critical to set a really strong foundation for how you're going to run your experiments. And according to Manuel, this really comes down to gathering as much information as you can when you're setting your hypothesis and estimations, because that's what you're going to be comparing your data to throughout the entire process.
After all this information and estimations in my spreadsheet, I basically wait, and after about 1 month, I compare my estimations with reality. And then I have some columns that I called them failure in estimation. And basically this automatically calculates the difference between reality and my estimations. And if the threshold is too high, I've got conditional formatting set up for that, and then it's red. And I don't like it to be red, of course.
Okay, so you have a strong foundation for how you're going to run your experiments and compare the reality of what the data shows you to what your informed estimations were. What does that look like in the context of this bigger framework? What is this framework that we're talking about?
We are spreadsheet aficionados, so it's all shared spreadsheets that like interconnected like crazy. Basically, we've defined a structure for marketing, which has several departments. For example, like inbound marketing, paid online marketing, event marketing, customer happiness, stuff like that. And each of these departments has subcategories. So for example, you can say inbound marketing, okay, it's the blog content and on the blog videos and, for example, guest blog posts, or we are in third-party newsletters or our social media stuff like this. And what we have done is we found a way that we can connect all these departments to work together to run a campaign. So what we have is we call it building blocks, and basically those building blocks are templates for campaigns. So for example, a building block would be the release of a new feature or a company milestone or a new blog post. And then you can shoot this campaign through the framework, literally from left to right. And the building block tells you what you have to do with this campaign. So for example, with a new blog post in the department of inbound marketing, it would be promoting it on Twitter and on Facebook, telling people via email about it that we know might be interested in, creating a newsletter for it, and of course writing the article on the blog. And afterwards, we would look at Quora or SlideShare and have a look if content to this topic is available, and then we could link to the blog post there. And regarding paid online marketing, for example, we then could create banners that lead to the blog post, and or we could use Twitter ads and link to the blog post from there. So yeah, stuff like that.
So they're taking all these various efforts and departments and channels that you might typically go after, and it seems like it might be, you know, a spider web of activity, and they're making it linear. They're creating what he calls these building blocks, and you can take this process from left to right in a spreadsheet and have individual experiments and hypotheses that you're testing for each piece of this entire framework and gather data that can be shared among everybody working towards this larger goal. Now, something to consider here is that you're going to get bogged down with a ton of numbers, especially if you're tracking things in various tools and all these various channels, right? So I think the really important thing to keep in mind that Manuel really stressed to me when we were talking about this is that these numbers aren't just numbers. These numbers are people. And what they're trying to do is understand people through the numbers. And so here's an example of how they might run a little experiment to test whether or not even their messaging is resonating.
We had to run some experiments to see if, like, I remember we put like, I don't know, $200 into Google Ads just to see if somebody would click. And we do this now every now and then just to verify some assumptions regarding messaging. So basically, what words will people react better to? And then I just create a simple banner and see which banner people click more onto.
And because they have such a linear process in their spreadsheet model, the learnings from that one little experiment can now affect the entire pipeline of a months-long marketing campaign. And so it just goes to show the power of even the smallest of experiments and getting a little bit of evidence that you're resonating or getting through to customers or helping them in a certain way that can actually have a domino effect on everything. So the big takeaway for me here is that we're living in a really exciting time where the amount of data you can collect and analyze is more than we can even really wrap our head around. And so it's about going back to basics and even just old school spreadsheets and starting small to make sure that you're setting yourself up for a successful experiment and then scaling that out in a linear way where everyone in your organization can see and learn from what every step is doing and work together towards a common goal. It certainly worked for CodeShip.
So our last story today is all about getting people to use the features that you build. So you have a core product, you have users, and then you're adding on features. And how do you measure whether those add-ons and that development that you're doing to create new functionality for your users is actually being used, if that's something that they want? And so we talked to Mike Thorpe from Shopify about their methodology when they approach marketing and measuring new features. So what makes this so different than regular marketing is the channels that you have available are often quite different than you would for acquiring customers. So ads don't really work. Many paid acquisition channels don't work. They're already your customers. They're already using your app. So the way Mike describes it is you have to get in the user's path. So here's Mike.
The main idea is to get in your user's path. So generally, your users will have a predefined path that they take through your product on a regular basis. The trick is to get in front of them at those times. So we've got a couple that we use frequently. Triggered emails are one of the best tools that we can use to get people to start using a product. A user will go through some specific step and we'll trigger an email that's a little bit more contextual. So we're not just blasting every customer. It's more about finding the right customer for that feature. The other thing that we do that's driven massive success with feature adoption is we treat new features like new products. So we'll do a blog post, we'll do full PR press, and then we'll treat it like a big launch. So a blog post a lot of the time drives a lot of the acquisition into a new feature.
And then the next step is to start measuring. And you're not necessarily measuring engagement at this point. You're just measuring, are they finding the feature? Are they getting in there?
It's less about converting them to using the feature and more about focusing on increasing your click-through rates, making sure that you have your event triggers set up so that you understand who's clicking where inside your product. And just really trying to drive people to the next step in the funnel.
And the next step is activation. Now, activation means that they are starting to adopt the feature. They're activating that feature. They must be using it in some way for some length of time. And those are all very measurable metrics. And I should say, before you start this experiment or before you start any experiment, just like we talked about with Brian Balfour, you should know what a successful activation is before we start measuring anything. So we know what we're measuring. So you should have those markers of success, X time of use, X number of uses, the certain steps that someone needs to take within the product to say, okay, you are activated. That is a success. This was worth building.
So activation for us, depending on the situation, because of course, every feature has a little bit different of a little bit different context. So for activation, what you're looking to do is get the user to perform the very first step that will get them to actually start using the product. So sometimes that might mean getting them to set up the new feature.
And finally, we have retention. This is always the hardest part. You have activated someone, they're starting to use the feature, but do they continue to use it? Is this a long-term use? And how do you measure that?
Yeah, so retention, retention is the tough part. So, of course, what we do at Shopify and a term that we've kind of coined is a value tipping point. So that's how many times does a user have to use that specific feature to start getting a value through it? And at what point is it that they're less likely to churn out? So that might mean a user has to use that product, five times in the next month, and that'll reduce the likeliness that they'll churn by X percent. So our job is to get them to that value tipping point as quickly as possible.
And then we talked about some of the tactics that they use to actually get them to that value tipping point. So grab your pen. This is a good one here.
One of the best ways to increase retention, in my opinion, is to show users what they're missing or what they're gaining. So for example, you could send, if your feature saves someone time, you could calculate how much time you're saving them per month and show them that with other statistics to show them how much value they're actually getting from your product and just reminding them of that value on a regular basis. On the other side, if you're still looking to gain some acquisition, you can use those same types of metrics to get non-users to try the features. So for example, you can show them how much money they could have saved had they used the feature that month.
So there you have it, a framework for walking through new feature developments. How do you measure them after launching them? So we're not just building, launching, and we don't even know who is using what. This gives us a very stable way to always be measuring the adoption of the features that we're building and give us a solid method to quantify the effort that the product team is doing and making sure that we're building the right thing for people. Because if we're not measuring, we really don't know who's using what. We hope you really enjoyed this today. I certainly got a lot out of these three stories, learning how companies are using data to inform their growth. Next week, we're going to talk about how do you use data internally in the form of KPIs and OKRs. What do these systems mean? And how can you use them to be a better leader, to be a better communicator with your team, and to set reasonable goals with a framework for action? So that'll be next Wednesday. Stay tuned. We have another fantastic interview coming out on Sunday as well. Always want to give a big thanks to our sponsor, Segment.com. We couldn't do this without them. Go to Segment.com/rocketship. Get $300 off a team plan. If you don't use Segment, you should. It's a no-brainer, really. If you haven't yet, subscribe on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a review. You can follow us on Twitter at RocketShipFM. You can follow me at Michael Sacca and Joelle at Joelle Goldman. All right, we'll see you back here in just a couple days.